Good morning. Come on, we can do better than that. Good morning. All right. Jeff, I didn't see you say good morning to me. Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate that. So we've been talking about the topic entitled, Why? So in looking at that, we've looked at different questions that either people who are not believers are asking us, or even as new believers, sometimes we ask ourselves, right, or others, because just not sure where we're going, or how we should act, or what we're doing, or why we're doing it, right? So we're going to look at some of the questions today, and the question we're going to ask today is, why do we need to go to church? Congratulations, you guys are all here. We're done. We'll see you guys later. You good with that? It's more than that, though. It's so much more than that. So we're going to start with, how many of you guys still have family reunions? Raise your hand. Keep them up. There's a pretty good chunk. How many of you used to have family reunions and you no longer have them? Wow, you see that? If you look around, there's a whole lot of hands that went up that second question. So, and when I talk about a family reunion, I'm not talking about the kind where you gather at Christmas with your mom and dad or your brothers and sisters. I'm talking about a real old-fashioned family reunion, okay? As a kid, I remember attending my mom's side of the family reunion. My dad's side was a train wreck, so we didn't go to that one. but the reality is, mom's side, we had a nice family reunion. Anybody ever been to Mary Jane Thurston State Park in McClure, Ohio? Good, I can lie about it and tell you all kinds of stories, and you guys would never know the difference. The reality is, I'm 46 years old. I don't remember a whole lot of it, if I'm being honest, okay? I remember they had a river there, and that was about it. And there were a lot of people there that I didn't know. So we would pack up the car every year and head to Ohio. Felt like we drove for what was forever. And we would get in the car, my brother and I, mom and dad. We would bring some kind of side dish, non-mayonnaise based, so we didn't kill anybody, okay? No mayonnaise. Our favorite drinks, because this was a big event for us. Huge event. So pick your favorite pop. I know I'm a dentist. I shouldn't say pop, but that's okay. You pick your favorite pop, soda, whatever it is, and you get in the car and you drive. And when you're 8, 9, 10, 90 minutes in the car, felt like an eternity. And we'd show up to this big, beautiful park. Lots of trees, a parking lot, picnic tables, pavilions, and people. Lots of people. People I had no idea who they were. But it was okay because I was a kid. My brother and I, this is how we coped. We always packed a swimming suit because there was a river there. At least I think it was a river. As a kid, it felt like a river. Could have just been a small creek. I don't even know by now. But we always played in the creek, whether mom wanted us to or not. So that was the highlight of our day. So we would go, and I remember this time is a time that I would play with, I'm going to call them cousins. They may not have all been cousins. I have no idea. So we would play with cousins. We eat a lot of food, and there was always junk food. Family reunions, you always have a lot of junk food, right? Nothing's really healthy. Nobody eats the salad, at least not the kind with lettuce, pasta salad, macaroni salad, potato salad. Those are the kind of salads I eat, in case you can't tell. So why don't we do these anymore? Why not? And as a kid, I remember the things that I liked. Playing with cousins, eating food, and the one thing I really remember, there was a lot of old people there who talked a lot. A lot, right? And I didn't honestly understand at that age what they were talking about. I had no clue. And it didn't matter to me because I was playing. Playground, river, creek, whatever you want to call it, that's what we did. So around your tables real quick, I want you to take a moment, and I want you to talk about family reunions, because I think every table had at least one hand up. What did you like to do, and what do you remember from them? So take a few minutes, talk about that. Okay, we ready? I've gave you a couple minutes. I think it was like two. That is a couple. So what are some of the reasons? Tell me. Food. What else do people remember? Games. What kind of games? Well, you didn't ask that question. Oh, man. Lawn games?
No, you know, okay. Badminton.
Okay, badminton. Okay. The darts game with the long spikes. You used to that one? Okay. I don't think they can do those anymore. What else?
Sunburn.
You didn't apply sunscreen, David? Come on. I didn't either, so I get it. What else? A Bigfoot hunt. Squatching. That is awesome. Now, the real question is, did you ever find one? Oh, so it's just a boy's thing. Huh. Okay, interesting. What do the ladies do while they're... They do lady stuff. All right. All right. It's like Vegas. What happens there stays there. Okay? Anybody else? Anything else? Hey, Don, it's okay. We can cry with you later. It's okay. But I'm not really worried about it. I feel that same way. Because honest, by the time I was 14 or 15, we had quit doing family reunion. So why did we let that happen? People died off. I mean, that's the reality, right? Right. It's no longer important to some people, and nobody wants to step up and run it. So if we're not going to do it any longer, what are some of the reasons? People die off. What else? Work gets in the way. They're busy. Nobody wants to plan it. Say what? It's not a priority. It's always during football. What else? Family conflict? All right, you can communicate through technology. You don't need to necessarily gather all in one place. People move away. It's too far of a drive, right? What's the big one that just happened in the last 2 years? And I'm tired of this word. COVID, right? Nobody wants to do it because of COVID. So, looking back as a kid, I wish we still did them. Why do I wish that? There are some valuable lessons when you get around people you don't necessarily get to see all the time, right? But as a kid, I missed those lessons. So I'm going to say this, younger people, listen up. I would say younger, let's do 30 and under, okay? Old people, George, you're old, okay? I know you're over 40. Okay, old people, if you agree with me, nod your head, okay? The older I get, the more I wish my family history had been passed down to me at these reunions and at other times, okay? There are things that my great-grandparents and my grandparents and my parents, aunts and uncles, could tell me from our family that I think are actually interesting and important now. At 8, 9, 10, I didn't care, okay? I wanted to know if there was extra dessert. Some of you still are like that. It's okay. The insights, the relationships, the knowledge of the family history, where we came from, who we are, these are all things that are forgotten. And you know, PD has mentioned in the last year a couple of times, I don't know if you guys have caught on to this. How long does it take a generation to forget the generation behind them? Can we do it in one generation? Right? How many times have you been flipping through some, okay, I'm going to date myself, kids, how many times have you been flipping through photos, you know, these things that are actually printed, not digital on a camera or on a phone, and you look at it, and it's grainy, and it's off-colored because it was done on a Polaroid, nobody shook it like they were supposed to, but the reality is, when you're looking at this thing, how many times have you looked at one and couldn't identify a single person in the photo? That's scary, right? I just looked at a photo last night. The irony is when family members from my family post something on Facebook, and I find it to be interesting, I will screen capture it or download the picture if it's a family thing because I want to hold on to that. I will never actually physically have that. So I was looking through my camera last night on my phone, and bang, I find this picture of my grandparents. If I was not paying attention, I would have completely missed who they were. It doesn't look like the old people that I knew. You know, they're much younger. My grandma's much better looking. My grandpa's still an ugly old guy, but that's okay. But that's the reality of it. We can overlook these things, right? So why are we letting this happen? What are we missing? And why are we forgetting? And why are we allowing our families to fall apart? And what's the impact of this? And I know some of you kids here are like, shut up, move on, old people. I am an old guy, okay? But someday, you're going to be the old guy up here or the old girl up here, and that's going to be the same conversation we're going to have. So some of you, and I understand this, are like, I don't want to go to a family reunion because my family is so dysfunctional, I don't want to be a part of it, right? I just heard at a table, family reunions were a terrible time for this person. It was a time of stress and strain. They were worried about cousins beating on them, right? Many of you have that situation? That's the reality of it. So when we don't have a family that is tight, we often try to collect a group of people that we would refer to as our tribe, right? They become non-blood relation family, our tribe. So how long does it take to accumulate a tribe? Do you just show up one day and you have one? Does it take years to find those people? You got to build it, right? You find people that you can live with and you run with it. And for some of you, the church has become that tribe. And that's a good thing. It's a really good thing. You've been adopted into this family, and we welcome you. But in turn, you got to welcome somebody else. Okay, it's not a one-way street. I know for Jackie and myself, we have found a family here at Grace. And that's a good thing. We're just like everybody else. We have family strife too, okay? My brother's crazy, her brother's crazy. It's okay. There are times that we're crazy. It is what it is. It doesn't make us bad people. It's just who we are. But on Sundays, we fellowship with the whole body here. Right? And then there's a day where we meet with a much smaller group, our home group. And we do life together in that small setting. And it is wonderful. There's nothing better than watching a person from your home group's son get baptized and welcomed into the whole household, right? What a great thing. He's part of the kingdom. So it's healthy, and they don't have to be blood to be family. So let's go back to the question. Why do we need to go to church? Did I answer it? Not really, right? It's okay. We'll get there. So, but before we can answer that question, why do we need to go to church? It would help to understand what the church is and where it came from. Correct? The assumption is the term church is scattered throughout the Bible, right? It's a term used multiple times inside the Bible. Wrong. Matter of fact, the term church is never used in the Old Testament. Not once. And the term church only appears three times in the four Gospels. And specifically, only in the book of Matthew. Does that surprise anybody? We talk about the church all the time, right? Shouldn't we have been talking about the church in the garden? Shouldn't Adam have founded the first church and we should be having church from day one? It's not how it works, unfortunately. So the first time we see the term church is in Matthew chapter 16, verse 18, where Jesus announces that Peter is going to be the rock upon which his church, Jesus' church, is going to be built. The second and third time we see this used is in Matthew 18, verses 15 to 17. And this is where we see Jesus give us instructions on how one brother is to handle another brother who sins against them. Okay? It's important to understand that Jesus establishes his church in Matthew 16. And in Matthew 18, he understands he's dealing with people like you and I. Okay? Sinful people. And that there's going to be strife. And we got to work through it. And he's giving us a blueprint on how to work through it. The early Christians came from various backgrounds. And they lived a much different lifestyle before becoming believers than they were called to live as believers. That's important. So what did their lives look like before? Christianity is one of these things that we take for granted. We take it for granted. These people grew up. When we become believers, we forget kind of what we were like before. At least we try to. Because that's our old self. That's the self we don't want to remember. We want to remember our Christian lives, right? We don't want to remember the struggle. So before, you were identified by your nationality or your ethnicity. Seems weird to us. If people ask you, hey, are you Irish? We have a Polish gentleman that runs this place, right? My kid struggles with this. Both my kids, right? Nationality and ethnicity, completely lost. We've had this discussion multiple times, doesn't work, okay? We're just people. It's much easier that way. But you were often defined by where you lived, who your tribe was, who your family was, what city you came from, and all of these things were your identity. And you didn't get to choose that. You were born that way. Your dad was born that way. Your grandfather was born that way. And you were born that way. If you wanted to choose, you were breaking tradition. So as a believer, when you decided to make that choice, there were consequences for it. And we see this in 2 Corinthians 5:17. The consequence was, as a new believer, you know, you became a new creation. The old is gone. The new is here. That new creation had consequences with it. Big consequences. Consequences today that I don't think we can fully understand. You lose your family because they weren't believers. You lose your source of income because quite often you were involved in a family business. If you own the business and you became a believer, people didn't want to do business with you. Okay? The men in the family specifically cut contact with you. You lose your inheritance. You lose the place you stay because unlike today, you just added an addition onto mom and dad's house back then. And when you decided you weren't going to be part of the family, they'd send you on your way. And you lose your friends. Do you see how bad this could be? Becoming a believer could have been really, really tough. But God didn't create us to be alone because this was isolationist, right? If you were thrown out of everything you knew, it would have been really easy to be by yourself. But we weren't created to be this way. In Genesis 2:18, we see God tell us this. Okay? He made a helper. He made a helper because he knew Adam couldn't do it by himself. And we have to think about that. So when you became a new Christian, you were brought into their fold. You were brought in to rebuild your job or your business by new believers. The believers would gather. They would do that. They would share relationships. They would share food. They would share shelter. They shared everything, okay? They brought you into the fold to worship. They would bring you into their house to do service. Does that make sense? So there was a physical and a spiritual care provided by the early church, and we see this in the second book of Acts. And in Acts 2, verse 42 to 47, I'm going to have you guys turn there because this is where we're going to be for a good chunk. Acts 2, 42 to 47. In Acts 2, verse 42, we read, "They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer." In verse 43, we read, "Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need." And in verse 46, "Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved." We can see a clear pattern in Acts 2 and how the early church functioned and the draw to being a part of it. If you just left everything behind, going to a group that would help provide for you was something you needed. We're going to take a time here. We're going to focus in on verse 46. Verse 46 reads, "They worshiped in the temple each day and met in the homes for the Lord's Supper." There were two places new believers gathered, and it involved a meeting in a larger setting like the temple and a smaller setting in a home where they shared life. Jesus didn't deviate from this pattern. He would regularly attend temple or the synagogue where he would learn or teach. And when he brought his disciples into the fold, as he gathered them, he would take them along with him. And when they were traveling from place to place, that's where they did home. There were lessons to be learned in both places, and there were opportunities in both places. There was a commitment to this new life that was needed as they were being prepared to lead the church into the future. After Jesus, we see Paul do this same thing. He would travel city to city, raising up churches. Paul's travels were in an obedience to God, calling him to bring the good news to the Gentiles. We can follow Paul simply by reading the letters in the New Testament to the various churches, either churches he visited or churches he was intending to visit. And there are many of them. In Colossians 4:15, we read that Paul is sending his greetings to the larger church in Laodicea and also to the smaller church that meets in a house of Nympha. Clearly, two sized churches here, right? From Paul's writings, we also read that the smaller churches, when they had a question about what they should do or how they should handle a situation that they couldn't decide for themselves, they would write to the larger church and ask for clarification. And the larger church would typically send a delegate to come through and straighten things out and give the position of the larger church so that there was consistency among the faith. So that's great. We know how the old church functioned, right? The kids here are thinking it's 2022 and we don't live that way anymore. Am I wrong? Most of us don't even do family reunions anymore by a show of hands, so are we living daily with our family like that? Probably not. So I want you to turn now to Hebrews chapter 10. And we're going to go verses 24 and 25. Verse 24 reads, "And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, Verse 25 reads, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. I like to read from the NLT, so I'm going to read verse 25 again here from the NLT, okay? And let us not neglect our meeting together. Let us not neglect our meeting up together. As some people do, but encourage one another, especially now that the day of his return is drawing near. Let us not neglect. I'm sure that if we asked each of you, you could probably come up with a couple of lessons we can learn just from those two verses. Two, three. PD was here, he'd probably come up with six, because that's just how he rolls. So, I only want to point out one, okay? There are plenty, but the one I want to point out deals exactly with the topic we're dealing today. Why do we need to go to church? Cliff Notes version? Obedience. The book of Hebrews was written at a time when the early Christians were suffering a great persecution. It was hard and it was long. And a lot of them started to really waver in their faith. I think we can relate to that, right? This book is a call to obedience to God. And they were under attack. How many of us today are under attack? Is our faith under attack today? And who's it under attack by? Think about that, right? Everything we do, there's an attack going on. Everything we do. We're not really any different. We just live in a different environment. Okay? And we've been told, if you read Scripture, that it's not going to be easy and that we will be persecuted. But we are to remain steadfast. Starting with Adam in the garden and continuing until this very moment, and it'll continue once we're done here today, the only thing God has asked us to ever be is obedient. In 1 Samuel verse 15, chapter 15, verse 22, but Samuel replied, does the Lord delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as much as obeying in the Lord? It is better to obey than to sacrifice. Jeff and Mary Burpee teach a class here through the Grace U called The Five Love Languages. Anybody ever read the book or taken the class? Good. Good. I'm going to give you the cheat. Ready? Do you know what God's love language is? Obedience. It really is. There are many verses in both the Old Testament and New Testament that say how much God values this trait. And obedience means gathering as the body so we can support and encourage one another. Nowhere in the early church do we see people being forced to go it alone. It could have been very isolating to be a believer, but it was never that way. You were merely exchanging your old belief system and your old life for your new life and your new belief system with God. When you identified with Christ, you were brought into both the larger church and a smaller church where you would learn to participate with other believers. Your will would become God's will, and by committing to God, you were making Him the Lord of your life. Seems pretty simple, doesn't it? But do we do it? We see in the beginning of Jesus' ministry when He calls His disciples that they left things behind. They left their families, their homes, their lifestyles. But does the Bible say that they were starving and they were unclothed and they had unmet needs? Is that what it says? No, it says the complete opposite of that, right? It says they were fed, they were taken care of, they were given places to stay. All of their needs were met. And they were met by people, by believers, who were supporting them so that they could continue the work that God had called them to do. believers were being obedient to God because the disciples were being obedient to God. And given the views of the church today as the family and body, we all belong to the same church, right? It's a much larger church. This is not the church. This is not the church that Peter founded right here, okay? We are merely a part of that church. We are part of that bigger body. God gave us different personalities, different gifts, different skills, and we are to use those for His church. Remember that. We're all part. And if you don't have a part of the body, what does the church look like? Can we handicap the church? Absolutely, right? We can handicap it, and that's not a healthy church. So when we're talking about a body, it's really easy for me to stand up and say, oh, we're all believers, we're all the body. So what do we take away from this? What do we take away with this? There are really three things, and probably more than that. There's more than three reasons why we should regularly attend church. Okay? I'm going to give you three. I'm sure you can come up with more. We'll do three. Ready? Number one, why should we attend church? Number one, to begin a relationship with God. Okay? If you're going to claim to be a child of God, which I believe most of us in this room have done, you better put Him at the center of your life. Right? If this were your job, okay, and today was your first day on the job, would you expect an orientation? Right? Would you expect at least somebody to be assigned to you to show you the ropes? This is a good place to do that, right? The church can be that person. The church can be that orientation. It can show you the ins and outs and provide you with a role model of what your new life as a Christian looks like and begins with. They can help teach you about your attitude, your actions, your affections, and your ambitions and why they should be God-centered. Reason number two, to grow in your relationship with God. I don't know about you guys, but when I learn something new and I'm really into it, I go way off the deep end. You can ask my wife this. She'll agree. I want to know everything there is to know about it. I'll spend hours researching. Anybody else like that? Maybe one of you? Hopefully. I'm not the only lunatic, am I? Okay, Jared's crazy too. Okay, good. Okay. Have you ever tried to do this with the Bible? There's a lot of stuff in there. There's a lot of stuff in there. And how do you know where to start? Do you start in the Old Testament? Do you go to the New Testament? Do we start in Matthew? Do we go to John? Do we go to Genesis? There's a million places to start, right? Some days it's easier just to open it and pick one. But wouldn't it be nice if you attended a place that had a blueprint to help you grow? Help that faith mature? So that you didn't have to guess where to start? That's our church, okay? Where's Patty at? There you are. So there's a group of us that meet on Friday mornings, have coffee, we do mentoring. A couple weeks ago, Patty broke the guy code for all of us, okay? And admitted that anytime a set of instructions come with something, he reads them. Okay? You can leave your man card on the table, Patty, but that's okay. You know why, though? We asked him, because we're all making fun of him, right? So we asked him, Patty, why do you read the instructions? Because none of us do. You know what he said? Because there's really good information in there. Okay? That's the engineer in him speaking. Because there's really good information. They wouldn't send him if they weren't important. Okay? That's a valuable lesson to me. Because I don't read the instructions and then I wonder why it doesn't fit because some guy must have made it wrong. Right? No, it's because I refuse to read the instructions. So, that's a lesson I think we all can learn. The reality is our mentoring program here at Grace is a great place for new believers to start. Start you with a Jesus book and the chapter of John, right? Bang, book of John and the Jesus book. Pretty simple, pretty explanatory. There's a process to it. It's not a worksheet. You're not just going to check the boxes. There's some thought that goes into it. But I would encourage you to do that if that is something you're interested in. Grace U classes. We started off another series this morning of Grace U classes. I don't know, there were probably 8 or 9 of you back in the corner over here this morning learning about where do we get the Bible from, right? If you're interested in learning more, these classes are a wonderful gift we have here to learn. There's an opportunity for you to grow beyond just sitting here Sunday morning, okay? You can share and invest with one another. It's fantastic. So I would challenge you guys to think about that. Think about joining one of those things. If you've never been mentored, it's a great process. Okay? We have plenty of people here who would love to mentor you. Plenty of them. And it's a commitment, I'm not going to lie, but it's a commitment I feel worthwhile doing. And I think other people would say that same thing. Next month, the month of November, we're going to change things up a little bit, and we're going to kick off what we call our, I want to make sure I say this right, home group boot camp. Okay? Home group boot camp is going to be an opportunity for you to get involved and understand a little bit what it's like to be in a home group. What's a home group? We're going to find out in November for sure. Quick version, Cliff Notes version. You meet at different times throughout the week with a small group of believers to learn even more and do life. Okay? Jackie and I have been involved in a home group for a few years now. It's fantastic. This is where we find our small community. Okay? It's fantastic. I would encourage you to do that. You're going to learn more in November, and you can get kicked off in November, and we can talk about getting you in one if that gets you excited. If it's something you're interested in now, come find me. We'll get you one. Find a staff member. We'll get you one. I want you guys to be involved in it. Take full advantage. If there were $100 bills sitting at the table right now, and I said, you guys can take as much as you want, you'd fill your pockets, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? Look at Don's grinning. He's ear to ear. Don, there's not $100 bills there. But if there were, you guys would fill your pockets. And I wouldn't blame you, right? You have a need. The difference is right now I'm offering you something far more valuable than a $100 bill. And whether you want to admit it or not, you have a need. And there's a way to fill that need. Okay? Number 3. The third reason why you should regularly attend church. And this is a big one. You need to share your relationship with God with others. Okay? Do you realize that most of us right here in this room have a story? We have a testimony. And we wouldn't even share it, more than likely, with somebody sitting at the table we're at. Because we're afraid. We're worried somebody would judge us. We're worried that it's not strong enough or powerful enough to move somebody. Okay? It's not about you. It's not. It's not about you. If God is asking you to do it out of obedience, share it. Okay? The church isn't about us. We're not called to be comfortable. We don't operate the same way God operates. Our desires and personal preferences don't put God in that box. Okay? We go in His box. He doesn't go in ours. It's not how this works. You know, when we come in the mornings, and then PD usually does a little kickoff, and then there's music, right? I don't like loud music. I used to like it loud. The older I get off my lawn, okay? Right? It's not that way anymore. I want you off my lawn, and I want the music quiet. Okay? But that's okay, because some people like the music loud. I don't like the bright lights. My eyes hurt. I like it dim. Ask my wife. Okay? When I sleep at night, it's got to be pitch black. Okay? Some people like tables. I don't mind the tables. We put chairs out here in rows. People freak out. You guys should see your faces. We should put a camera up here one day and record people when they come in and the seating arrangement isn't the same. My original plan today, and I backed off of this, was to make every one of you get up and go sit at a different table with somebody who isn't at your current table. But I figured that'd take too long. I asked you a simple question, and it's like a 30-minute conversation. I figured that'd take half the day. So, but think about it. We get comfortable, right? That's not what God wants. It's not about that, okay? We are here to share our testimonies. We're here to share our experience, okay? The Great Commission in Matthew 28, verse 18 to 20 says, "And Jesus came and said to them, 'All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you, and behold, I am with you always to the end of the ages.'" This is the Great Commission. Great commandment was to love each other, right? Love God, love each other. Great Commission was to tell people. Spread it. So for the month of October, I want everybody to think of one Christian. Take 10 seconds right now in your head. Who's the first non-Christian that pops in your head? You don't have to tell me, but you need to identify that person. Can you do it in 10 seconds? Got him? Got him? Okay. Now for the month of October, I want you to pray for that person. Okay? Then I want you to talk with them. It doesn't have to be face-to-face. You can do it on social media if that's how you roll. How about this? You can call them on the phone. Okay? I know the young kids just panic. What? The old people were like, "That's good, because I don't know how to text." Right, Denny? Third thing I want you to do, I want you to invite them. That could be here. That could be to coffee. That could be to dinner. That could be a movie. You get the point of it? It's to be with them, right? To be with them. And the last thing I want you to do, I want you to put yourself in a position, because you know they're a non-believer, to share the gospel. Okay? Four things. Pray with them. Talk with them, invite them, and share the gospel with them. You got your person, right? You got, today's the second, 29 more days. Can we do that? Sounds simple. In 29 days, I want to know how many of you have done it. Because the reality is, there might be 5 or 6 of us. And that's pretty scary, isn't it? So not only could we grow the body, it's not about the growth. It's about the obedience. Because this is what God calls us to do. So as we close today, I want to bring you back to a statement that we see from Jesus early on in his ministry, okay? And he said these two words, "Follow me. Follow me." He called people into a relationship with him and the others who were already following him. He didn't take the people who were with him and say, "All right, I'm done with you. Got two new guys coming in." You didn't get replaced. You were called to follow, okay? He didn't ask you to attend somewhere. He didn't ask you to show up, and he didn't ask you to give lip service. How many of us do that regularly? Think about it. I'm guilty of this. I want to watch a football game. So I take 30 seconds to do what I should be doing for God so I can watch 3.5 hours worth of guys beating their heads together. Right? I got more invigorated staring at the screen screaming because some official missed a flag that they should have thrown than I did reading my daily scripture. Okay? Following involves a closeness. Following involves a commitment, a consistency, but not a casualness. There's nothing casual about following Jesus. He didn't say, just walk behind me and see where I'm going. He said, come with me, right? Come with me and learn what it is I do. His call to follow meant that people had to reorder their lives around him, and that people who were like-minded were part of that. And you reordered your life to live his how he lived his. How many of you submit your priorities to Jesus? I don't always do it. I fail. What I need to see is growth. And I see growth because I'm being obedient. Okay? This is why Christians are called out of the world to be the church. His church. Did you catch that? His church. Let's bow our heads. Father, I just want to ask today that every person here take a moment. Take a moment and see where we're struggling in our lives. Where could we improve in this obedience? Help us pick one thing to work on for the next week. One thing. I've asked them to find one person, and Father, I just ask that they follow through with that. Find the one thing to personally work on and the one person to work on. And Father, we could spread this throughout the kingdom, multiply significantly. Father, I want every person that I know to understand who you are. I want everybody to have heard your call. It doesn't do us any good if somebody never heard it. Don't assume. Give us that strength. Give us that power. And give us that faith and that obedience. Father, we ask all this in your name. Amen. Thank you, guys.